Good afternoon, everyone. Fine. We're studying Masechet Bava Kamma, of course. We're in chapter 8. Today's Mishnayot are 2, 3, and 4. Bet Gimel Dalid. Perhaps we'll get to Hay also. And Mary Beth just reminded me that it is a good idea to go through a little bit of the Mishnah last week, review the basic idea in 1 minute, and then we'll go over the last two lines of it for a good 2 or 3 minutes. So the Mishnah began, the first Mishnah of chapter 8, Perek Shmini, had it said, Ahovel b'chaviro, he who does bodily damage to his fellow, chovel b'chaviro, damages in his friend to his friend, and it doesn't mean that you have to know each other, just another human being. Chayav alav mishum chamishad varim, you who did the damage have to pay him 5 things, and they are Nezik, Tsar, Ripui, Shevet, Boshet. Nezik, the actual damage. Tsar, the pain caused. Ripui, the doctor bills. Shevet, unemployment. In other words, pay him back what he would have been making at work, but he can't go to work now because he's been hurt. And Boshet is the shame of the embarrassment. That we did last week at the whole Mishnah. What we want to do is just look at the end of the Mishnah. Last time we studied the end of the Mishnah, but only one aspect of it. We did the exegesis of how the Talmud learns out, I should say how Torah Sheba'al Peh learns out the very obligation of paying boshet, of paying shame or humility. But we didn't look beyond that exegesis, and it was very fascinating, if you remember.
What is exegesis?
The Parshanut.
Ah!
The Darshanut, the learning out from the Psukim. We didn't focus on the details that are written here at the end of the Mishnah. So let's look at the end of the Mishnah. In my printing, it's a good 5 lines at the end. And it says, Boshet? Question mark. The payment for shame, something about it. Hakol lefi amivayesh v'mitbayesh. It's all according to the shamer and the shamee. Now, had we had time, we could spend a long time on that. It's quite interesting and fascinating. What it means in general is that shame, humiliation, is completely and absolutely subjective. How do you measure if a certain act caused someone shame? It depends on the person who was shamed, how thick his skin is, what his social standing is, what his expectations are. It also might depend on the shamer, what his status is in society. But there's a lot in the commentaries about that. We won't talk about it. We'll just mention as we just did. Then we'll go on and we'll read further.
It's a huge sensitivity.
Yes. Again, it's contextual and it is subjective.
Does shame, does psychological damage, is that under pain or is that under shame?
We're talking about shame now.
Okay.
We're talking about shame. Hamivayesh et ha'arom, he who shames someone who is naked. Hamivayesh et ha'suma, someone who shames someone who is blind. Hamivayesh et ha'yashen, someone who is sleeping. Chayav, you have to pay. And all those cases, why does the Mishnah say this? Because you might think you don't have to pay. Actually, I have another copy of the Mishnah. You might think you don't have to pay. Let's see. Because you'd say someone who is walking around naked, you don't have to pay any shame if you shame them, like by tripping them. Because they're already shamed. They must have a pretty thick skin to walk around naked. But no, people have different shame levels. He might not be ashamed to walk around naked, but he is ashamed if you trip him up and he falls on his back. So don't think that you're off the hook just because on one level he doesn't feel shame, on another level he might. Someone who's blind and you shame him in a fashion that he doesn't see that he's been shamed.
Naked.
Right? But still, when you tell him he's been shamed, he'll feel shame, even though he didn't see it. Still have to pay. And the same thing.
The Emperor's New Clothes story in a whole different way.
No, you can also shame the blind person with words.
Well, that's obvious that you'd have to pay, but this is a means to hint to a case which you don't have to pay because he didn't see what you did to him. But again, if once he hears about it, he will retroactively feel shame. And the same thing with the Miveshet Yashen, someone who's sleeping, right? You do something that shames him, like you take off his clothes while he's sleeping. He doesn't know about it. You put the clothes back on before he wakes up.
And then he sleepwalks while
But again, if he hears later that he was shamed while he was sleeping, he'll feel shame even though at the very moment he didn't know what was happening. In all those cases, chayav.
So it should be also the one who shames the deaf person by speaking about it.
Well, the person who's deaf in the time of Chazal is considered to be a deaf mute.
Oh.
Right, and that's a whole different story. He's a shote. I'm sorry. I say shote. Take it back. Not a shote.
He's a
cheresh. But
yeah.
The cheresh is someone who's
mute?
Not considered to have intellectual capacity.
Really? Even old
Remember,
people?
They set those deaf people apart. They really are regarded like little kids, right?
I don't... that I can't tell you. The Torah and the Tanakh tells us about people who get old and lose their sight. But not, we don't hear people lose their
hearing. Maybe they didn't get old enough to lose their hearing.
I don't know. Well, you know, the Avot got pretty old. So let's go on. Vayashen Shebiyesh Pator, a sleeping person. You mentioned sleepwalking, right? A sleeping person who shames someone, he is Pator.
How?
And we'll see in a minute
how
why.
He shames someone. I see why he's Pator, because he wasn't. He didn't really know what he was doing, but
right.
But how would he shame somebody?
You want me to give you ideas?
Oh. What if you're? Does that also apply, like, if you're drunk or if you're not? You know.
Oh yeah.
Not. You don't really have as much control over your. You know.
No.
Well, we're about to see that as far as boshet, you need kavana. In order to be chayav, you have to have done it purposely. The drunk person does not do it purposely.
Is that, are they really, because you could argue that.
Yeah.
They're
because
under
you would
the influence
say
of alcohol or drugs, but they're still acting in a...
They're still themselves.
Or they're acting in a purposeful manner. They just may have their judgment inhibited.
So what I said was my on one foot reaction. I didn't give that deep thought.
And, it's not
and they also
yet.
Had a choice whether to take the drugs or not. But people sleep.
You have a choice to go to sleep also.
No, you don't have a choice. You
no,
have to sleep.
No.
It's like choice not to eat forever.
Okay, let's go on to other things. I understand there is something to talk about. The drunk, I don't know the answer. Nafal min agag vizik uviyesh. Right, you were walking on the roof. You fell down, and you fell on Yoni, and you broke his leg. And it also embarrassed him. How did it embarrass
when
him?
When did it embarrass Yoni that
not
somebody fell on him?
Because it's not his kippah off, and he was embarrassed to be without his kippah.
Oh.
Right? Okay. So what's the law? The law is chayav ala nezek ufator ala boshet. The person who fell off the roof is chayav ala nezek. Because we learned that Adam Muad Leolam, this was many months ago, one
right.
is always responsible even when things happen to him. And even the person who's sleeping, all the more so if you fell off the roof. It was totally an accident, but you're responsible for everything that you and or your body does.
Then
without any intention at all. That's as far as Nezik goes. But as far as Boshet goes, that's only when you're Mitkaven. So that's why it says Chayav LeNezek UFator LeBoshet. Shenemar brings the verse we saw last time. V'shalcha Yadav Ichzika B'Mvushal. We won't go through the whole thing. It was very interesting and complicated. The conclusion of the verse is Eino Chayav Al HaBoshet Ad Shiehe Mitkaven. One is not Chayav to pay for embarrassment caused unless he was mitkaven, unless he intended to embarrass. Not just intended to do something, but intended to embarrass. Okay, that's from last week. Most of that we didn't do, but it's the Mishnah from last week. What I want to focus on today, as we said 5 minutes ago, is Mishnah Bet, Gimel, Dalet, and Hey. We even will get to Hey, I think. Is everyone ready?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go. Mishnah Bet. Ze chomer ba'adam mi bashur. This is the severity of Adam as opposed to Shur. Everyone remember what an ox is?
Yes.
How do you say ox in Hebrew?
Shur.
Very good. Shur. Okay? So things are more serious concerning human beings who do damage than Shvarim that do damage. Shvarim is the plural of Shur. Oxen. Sha'adam mishalem nezik. Tsar, ripui, shevet, uvoshet, umishalem demei v'ladot. A man pays the nezik, the damage, the tsar, the pain, the ripui, the doctor bills, the shevet, the unemployment, the voshet, the shame, umishalem demei v'ladot, and also pays for the worth of the fetus. Remember, that's the case in which you unfortunately cause damage to the body of a pregnant woman, she loses her fetus, and you have to pay for that as well. In addition to other five payments.
A woman or also an animal?
Well, here the whole subject is
Adam.
Is Adam.
Yeah.
Chovel b'chaveros. So that's a whole different can of.
No, but that's who you're asking about. That's the individual who causes the damage. But to
cause
you're
a
asking
cow.
About to whom the damage is caused. So,
for example, I can drive my.
No, we are here talking only about damage to human beings. Right, this whole chapter is a chovel v'chaviro, someone who causes bodily damage to his fellow.
A cow cannot be my friend.
But we did talk in the past, many, many months ago, about causing a miscarriage.
Yes, we did.
To assure. Certainly that's been discussed. I can't remember what we said.
Neither do I.
Is it only miscarriage, or would, say, some other injury to the fetus, like causing a birth defect, resulting in a birth defect?
Oh.
Those are hard to prove.
And I don't think Chazal knew of such things, right? So I have no idea. I have no idea. That's, I guess, that must be discussed in a modern poskim, but I don't know at all. I don't know at all. V'shur eino mishalem ela nezek ufator midamei v'ladot. Whereas in the case of shur, right, and this is the shur that does bodily damage to someone. Eino mishalem ela nezek, the shur, of course, which means the owner of the shur. Eino mishalem is ela nezek, which means that the owner of the shur doesn't have to pay tsar, ripui, shevet, boshet. Ufatur midamei vladot, and also patur for the damage caused to the fetus, the loss of the fetus.
So we can deduct from it something quite important. That if somebody is in a higher hierarchy, he should assume higher responsibility. Like, for example, an educated person or person that learns a lot of Torah should be more responsible than Am Haaretz, because he should know better.
I would say that's true, but where do you get that from?
Because you see the elevation between a human and a bull.
Oh. Well, it's not. You know, let's wait 10 minutes.
So, as a bull human.
Let's wait 10 minutes on that, okay? Let's wait 10 minutes on that. And then we'll see. Let's go through the 9 questions, and then we'll see what you say about that. Question number 1. When the Mishnah says Adam, which of the Avot HaNizikin is it specifically referring to?
Adam HaMazik.
Adam HaMazik. Right? It's called, there are a number of Avot Nizikin categories of Nezik, Adam HaMazik. That's what this whole chapter is talking about, Adam HaMazik, and specifically it's been talking about Adam HaMazik to another human being. So it's the Adam HaMazik that causes damage to another human being that has to pay the 5 payments. Question 2. When the Mishnah says shur, which of the Avot HaNizikin is it referring to? That's a more complicated question.
Oh, not shur mu'ad.
That's not one of the Avot HaNizikin. That's one of the Avot HaNizikin.
Right. I don't know that that's the one. Right. Just...
Regel, it could be.
Shane.
Or the third one that it might be.
Karen.
Karen, Shane, Regel. If you remember, Karen is damage done with the horn, which what it means really is unexpected intentional, unexpected, out of the ordinary damage done with aggression. And Shein is damage done by the animal in the course of getting hana'ah, of getting enjoyment, whether it's eating or rubbing itself on a something. And regil is damage caused by an animal in the course of locomotion.
Well, that has to be like hurting. Let's say the cowboys are hurting a couple of hurting like cows, and they run into somebody's barn.
Run into someone's barn. And if they, in the course of locomotion, break the barn, that indeed is a case of regil. Yeah.
And say cows get out of the barn since they broke the fence, would they have to pay for the barn and the cows and the fence?
Well, so
if my cows cause damage to your property in the course of their locomotion, the answer is I have to pay, yeah.
Is regel only locomotion, or regel is anything that the animal is used to do?
Well, if it's getting hana'ah...
No. For example, a roaring of a lion.
Oh. If the roaring of the lion causes someone to fall in a pit.
Right. That should be
That's a very good case, and the truth is, I just don't remember.
I thought that you told us...
The animals frightened somebody or startled somebody and he fell into a pit? Wasn't that...
Yeah, we did. Yes, not in the Mishnah, we had it in the Gemara.
Yeah. But I thought you told us that regel is anything that the animals have the habit of doing, not only locomotion.
But it was okay. Separated.
That's why I brought the roaring.
One of my weak points is my memory, so
mine
we have
too.
To help out here and whatever we remember, put it together.
If the cow, or some animal breaks something and then the thing damages the cow, so he walks into a barn and the barn falls on it and injures it.
So they do this like damage once removed.
So what? So the cow that's causing the damage gets injured while causing the damage.
We had the case of an animal that ate my food and it wasn't fitting for him, and he died from eating my food that he shouldn't have eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's
as long as the
food was on my property where it should be, then I don't have to pay if your animal died by trespassing in my barn eating my food. Right, that was also, I think, it wasn't in the Mishnah. I think it was a source that I brought, an extra source from the Gemara. But let's focus on the material here. So we've just said that when the Mishnah says sure, it might be referring to all of those three avot nizikin: keren, regel, shein. So now look at question three, which starts getting interesting.
But
in all of them, the owner only has to pay nezek and not shevet, ripui, tsar, boshet.
Oh.
That's the point. Question three. In light of the answers to the two above questions, which avot nizikim seem to have fallen between the cracks? That's an important question. No one leaves the room until you get the answer.
Boar.
3 points for Mary Beth.
Good job, Mary Beth.
In other words, if we say there are five categories here of payments, and Adam Hamazik has to pay all five of them, whereas Karen, Regel, and Shane only has to pay one of them, Nezik, then, well, tell me what the law is concerning Boar. Is Boar like Adam Hamazik that has to pay all the payments? Or is Boar like Shor that only has to pay one of the payments? We don't know. And it's not only concerning Boar we should have that same question, but also concerning Ish. What other?
Ish.
3 points for Benny. Right, that's the question.
They seem to both have some of the characteristics of Adam Hamazik. And, you know, animals.
That, yeah,
it's something that you make, but also that you don't really have control over.
They're man-made.
Who falls into it, or, you know, where the fire can go.
Okay, good point. And that's exactly our question here. If I dug a pit and you fell in it, do I have to pay anything beyond Nezik? Yes. I dug the pit. It's not just my animal that has a mind of its own, but I dug the pit. Same thing with my Ish. I made fire on my property and it spread to your property and caused damage and it caused boshet, shevet, tsar, ripui. Do I have to pay for those things or only for the Nezik? That's the question that our Mishnah doesn't seem to answer. Doesn't seem to answer.
I have a question, a very simple one. What is chovel? Is it direct hitting or it can be indirect, like opening, leaving a pit open?
That's the question. That's the you're just asking the question in different language.
No, that's just the word. What is chovel? Hitting?
In the simplest sense, chovel is someone who damages his fellow.
Then it's a pit too.
But that's the question. You're just pushing the question to a different level. But it's the same question. What is the law here? Let's go on with my questions and see if we can figure something out here. What do you think the law is concerning the Avot Nizikin Hylan in the previous question? That's what we're discussing here. What is going to be the law concerning Bor and concerning Ish? So I might say I can take it in both ways. I can say, look, Adam Mazik, different language, Chovel B'Chaviro, is me directly. My fist went into your stomach, right? Directly. Mm-hmm. Whereas I can say, so that's the case in which I have to pay for all these five categories. But if it was only my mamon, right, my mamon, my possessions, like my animal, or my boar, or my eish, that's not directly me. So I don't have to pay all these other four payments, but only the Nezik. Or I could say the opposite. I can say, look, the animals, they have a mind of their own. I was negligent in not being careful with them, but they did the damage. Whereas the boar doesn't have a mind of its own. I made the boar, and I put it where I'm not supposed to put it, and shoot there a beam, take the simple case. You fell in, it's completely me. It's like an extension of me. It's not just my animal that has a mind of its own. Same thing with Aish. That's an extension of me. So you might... It's not clear. It's not clear from the Mishnah.
We had this to some extent, right, when we were talking about like shooting an arrow versus...
Yes!
Right.
Good.
Right.
Good. So, great that you brought that up. So,
I'm like a sword.
When we once talked about... Good. So in the case of me punching you in the face, that's clearly me. In the case of me stabbing you with a sword, that's an extension of me. I'm holding the sword while it goes into your stomach. God forbid. And then we brought up a few months ago the matter of shooting arrows at you. Well, when the arrow goes into your head, it's no longer attached to me. Is that considered to be a Dama Mazik? And I mentioned then...
But you shot it.
Yes, I shot it, but I built the boar, or I let the animal go. What does it matter if I shot the arrow, or I shot the shore at you?
Are we trying to classify it under the... are we trying to classify it under the buttons?
Yes.
So if I threw a bomb on a city, I'm not responsible?
Okay, because let me finish the thought. When we discussed this in the past... I mentioned the question concerning arrows or shooting a gun. What I didn't mention then, because I didn't remember, is that the Gemara has a conclusion. Mm-hmm. And the conclusion is an arrow is an extension of you. That's Adam Mazik.
Good.
That's Adam Mazik.
Good.
Just
good.
To set your... Right. However, once we said that arrows and guns, bullets, are Adam Mazik, it's an extension of my... Yada arichta. Yada arichta means my extended hand.
Elongated.
Mm-hmm. Right? It could be my sword, it could be my arrow. It's still part of me. It's from koch, it's kocho. It's the power, the direct power of the man. That's the expression. Yada arichta or kocho. Kocho. However, I can still now ask, is bor or is esh like his arrows or Is it not?
It like a bull that was not penned properly?
That's the question, right? Boar and Ish, is it like your mamon, or is it like your hits of, your arrows? That's, to be exact, that's the question.
What's the former?
Chitzav. I didn't say it correctly. Chitzav. Like his arrows. Chitzav. His arrows. Is it mamono? Mamon, money. Is it his possessions or his arrows? That's the question concerning Bor and concerning Esh. Okay? And we'll give an answer to that within 5 minutes, hopefully. Let's go on with the questions.
Is there no price of intentionality? For example, people leave pits for animals to trap them.
Yes. And
but not for humans.
Well, sometimes people leave traps for humans.
Right.
Oy.
It's part of war.
So what's the question?
So is intentionality. If you have intention, does it become yada richta? And if you have no intention, it becomes just negligence, like mammon.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, if I put the hole in the middle of the sidewalk.
Knowing that you take every morning a walk at 6:15.
Right.
And I tend to plug it after
because you just said you have to intend to embarrass.
I do an act of arson versus, I have a fire and it just got out of control.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I would say...
I don't know. You just mentioned, like we said, intentionality.
Yeah.
But intentionality, we discussed in Boshet, won't obligate you to pay unless the means that caused the Boshet is a category that has to pay for Boshet.
Yeah.
Wait, didn't we reveal person numbers?
In other words, if it's sure, in other words,
Didn't we deal with the arson question we on Shavuot when we talked about
arson?
Yeah. Stuff hidden in the hay.
Right, that's back in the second chapter.
Right.
But I don't remember intentionality there.
No.
Right, the dog took the cake that had a coal devuk to it, attached to it, and then the coal fell out in the hay and started a fire. But I don't remember questions of arson there.
I thought we talked about, like, you go to the haystack and set it on fire versus you set it on your lawn and it goes... I never done that, but that one.
I admit that it could be. Like, I'd be happy if anyone, we discuss a lot of questions here, and I don't know the answers to most of the questions. If people can look them up, I'm happy to get help.
There's no intentionality in that. It's Mishnah Gimel.
In chapter 2?
In chapter 2.
Yeah. But it could be that I brought some other sources that I don't remember.
That might be.
So anyway, I didn't mean look it up now. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so let's go on to question 5, which Mary Beth already tried to answer. Does the end of the previous Mishnah, talking about intentionality in Boshet, shed any light on the issue that is aroused by the previous question, which is, do Bor and Esh have to pay the 4 payments? And of course, Mary Beth said perhaps the previous Mishnah does shed some light, but I answered her and said that it doesn't. Because even though we said that you need intentionality for Boshet, that doesn't mean that if you have intentionality, you have to pay Boshet. You still have to make sure that the way you caused the damage, the Boshet, was a avot, one of the avot that is Hayav for
which is only for Adam HaMazik.
Well, we're asking, is it only Adam HaMazik or is it also Shur? I'm sorry, is it also Esh Tabor?
So that's no help.
So it's no help yet. Let's go on to the next question. In general, and in light of the answer to the second question, in what sense is the use of the term shur in the Mishnah imprecise? Now, this is a parenthetical question. It's not exactly what we've been talking about for the past 5 minutes. We said that the shur there refers to at least shur, Karen, Regel, and Shane.
Okay.
Why is using the word shur for those three avot, why is it imprecise? It is very imprecise, by the way.
Yes. It's a totally different concept of categories.
All three of them are shur, right? Why can't I use the word shur?
Well, because it applies to any animal.
Of course, it applies to any animal.
So we can say behemoth.
Why didn't say Beima? What did it say Shur?
Or Beima.
Or Chaya.
Or Chaya. Well, that's a question at the end of the first chapter.
Yeah, because what about the lesson.
If it's a chaya that's really wild, then I don't have to pay because it doesn't work. And if it's my chaya...
Chaya is the connotation of wild animal.
Yeah, oh yeah, chaya means wild animal. So anyway, so now what's the answer to the question? The question is, why does it say shore when it really means any animal? The answer to that... Because it's common. The most common animal is a shore in those days. How do you say that in Hebrew? What's the expression?
Oh. Stam?
No. Nafots?
No. I mean in the Hebrew Shafia? Of the Mishnah. In the Hebrew of the Mishnah. Shafia? To explain that the Torah speaks in the common case, but it also refers to other cases.
Oh, this is one of the 13 rabbinical principles?
Very good. Yes, it is.
Which one?
Something prath a la claw or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
What did we say in the morning really quickly and we don't have time to read it?
The answer is Diber Haketuv Behoveh. Diber Haketuv Behoveh. The Torah speaks in the present, in the Shechiach, in the common case. Now we had that principle a few months ago in the Mishnah. We can hold our place where we are now and just flip back, anyone who can find it. I don't remember exactly where it was, but I will find it and we'll tell you. Am I sure we had it? Yes, I am.
Doesn't even ring a bell. Not even
the end of Mishnah Hay. I'm sorry, the end of chapter 5. The end of chapter 5, the very last Mishnah at the end of chapter 5. I guess you don't have it here? Lan?
Oh, it's okay.
Are you looking over there? Okay. Yes, that's
you're
it.
Right.
Chapter 5, Mishnah Shemin, it says, anyone would help Mary Beth find what page it's on in the photocopies?
Oh, it's 52.
I was not in that class.
I got it.
I found it.
Echad hashur v'chad kol behema. Whether a shore or whether any animal, the nefilata bor concerning falling into a pit, v'lahafreshat har sinai, letash tamei kepel, v'lahashbatat ahashavat aveda, l'frika, l'chasima, l'kelaim, l'shabat, all different categories, v'chein chaya v'of kayotze ben, also wild animals and birds and other similar things. It refers to all of these cases in Cain. Lama ne'mar shur chamor, if so, why do the verses specifically say shur o chamor? Elish diber haketuv bahove. Spoke the verse in the common case. So it says shur or chamor. In the Torah, it means all animals. In our Mishnayot, it says shur, but it means all animals. Okay, good. Now let's go back to our question sheet to number 7. Where earlier in our tractate, as we just did, how we found an explanation of why the Mishnah in general feels justified in using the term shur in this imprecise fashion, that's the answer, because the berakatub behoveh. Question 8, where is the biblical source for the payment of demei vladot? It says here that the man has to pay demei vladot, but shur doesn't. So if we go back to
the next week's Torah portion.
Very good. It's in actually this week's Torah portion.
Oh, of course.
Beginning today. Right? So says Lan, let's go to Parshat Mishpatim. And we spent quite a while on this verse in the past.
Yes.
Let's see, where was that? Chapter 22, I think it was.
21, verse 22.
Say it again, please.
Exodus 21, verse 22.
21, 22, okay. Art school knows best.
21:22.
Yes, it's a Shmot 21:22. When men fight, kiyatsu anashim, one of them pushes a pregnant woman and miscarriage results. V'nakfu isha harav yatsu yeladeya, but no other damage ensues. V'lo yason. Then it says, the one responsible shall be fined according to the woman's husband. May exact from him the payment to based on reckoning, etc. So anyway, it says miscarriage ensued. In other words, she lost her child. It's the mei vladot. It says you have to pay. The verse says that anosh ye'anesh. He will certainly be responsible for paying for that. So that's the source. That among other damages that have to be paid, you also have to pay for the loss of the fetus. And again, according to our Mishnah, that's only when Adam, Hamazik, causes the damage, does not mean the shore causes it. If the shore caused the woman to miscarriage, don't have to pay. The owner of the shore doesn't have to pay. Only for the nezik to the woman herself. And this was discussed in our Mishnah a few months ago. Let's see if I can remember exactly where it was. Well, I can't remember. I just have to look. Where did we talk about the Meiv Ladot? Anyone else wants to look together with me so we can remember where it was? Where was that?
It's hard once a month. It's hard once a month.
Well, you can review every day, 5 minutes a day.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I see here chapter 5, Mishnah Dalet. Chapter 5, Mishnah 4.
Oh, okay. Yes.
The fourth Mishnah of the fifth chapter says, Shur Shayin Mitkaven Lachaviro, Mikata Isha Biyatsu Yeladea. A shur that wanted to attack me, but instead attacked my wife, God forbid, and she was pregnant, and she lost her fetus, Patur Midamei Vladot. The shur is Patur Midamei Vladot, and the Mishnah goes on to say that a man who did the same thing, intended to attack me, but attacked the woman and the children, were lost, the fetus was lost, Mishalem Demei Vladot.
Even if he didn't intend to attack the woman.
Right, as long as he intended to hit someone, that's a whole different question of intentionality. So anyway, with all that background, we're now back to the question concerning Eish, concerning Boar.
Right.
The person who owns the Eish, who made the Boar, someone fell in, they lost, they have Shevet Ripui Tsar Boshet, do you have to pay? Or not. So I brought here some two middle sources that will shed light on that. Ready?
Yes.
Okay. So this one is from Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Nun Gimel Amud Bet, which is not material on our Mishnah. It's actually earlier in the chapter, but it does shed light on this question. It deals with something deeper and wider, but while it's dealing with something else, we'll also see a clear answer if you have to pay, if the owner of the boar has to pay all the four other payments or only has to pay nezek. That's the question. We'll read it. Amar Rava. Shur v'adam shedachafu labor. So it means that an ox and a man teamed up to push someone into a pit. Okay? Shur v'adam shedachafu labor. I'm standing in the street. Lan comes up with a shur. They both push intentionally against me, and I fall into the pit.
It was the ox's idea.
Well, I think you have to pay everything in that case.
Why?
Because you're a damamazi.
You meant to do it.
Yeah, that's it.
It's just like a person doing it. You're just adding to it by adding the ox there.
The question is,
but you're directing the ox, like you're.
But
like,
Lan like you're didn't punch me in the face. I got hurt by the boar, not by Lan.
But no, but if I pushed you though, it's like you're pulling your ox to eat to forcing him to eat the food in the field. You know, the ox is doing it, but you're the one that's kind of directing it.
But wait a second. Even if the ox was not in the picture, but Lan just pushed me into the boar, does Lan have to pay for all the four payments? Because he didn't punch me in the face. The boar hurt me, not Lan.
Oh, come on. You push him in the boar.
Or were you hurt by the punch or by the falling?
Would it be...
I got hurt by the boar, not by you.
But you fell into the boar.
Say it again?
It's like you were hurt by the bad air in the boar, actually.
right.
Yeah. Would Lana have been a difference between you falling on the ground and... Well, no, not the difference. But would he only have to pay for you, you know, him pushing you onto the ground because the fall wasn't his fault? So if he had pushed you normally, you would have fallen onto the ground, and that would have been probably less money to pay to you. But what I was saying is the owner of the pit should have to pay for the difference between you falling on the ground and what the pit added to the damage.
So your extra momentum of falling.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see what Rava says. Rava says, Amar Rava, Shur v'adam shedachafu labor le'inyan nizikin, right, concerning the one payment of nizikin and not the other four, kulan chayavin. In this case, that would mean that the owner of the boar, the owner of the shore and lan, they split a third, a third, a third, the nizikin. But that's not our question. Our question is going to what comes next. Le'inyan arba'a dvarim u'dumei vladot. That's our question, right? Le'inyan arba'a dvarim, all the other poor payments other than nezik and dumei vladot, adam chayav v'shur uvor patur.
Okay.
There's a clear answer to our question. Concerning the four, adam chayav,
makes sense,
that we know from our Mishnah. We also know that shur is patur from our Mishnah. But this also adds that boar is also patur.
But don't we have a biblical thing about the boar, that somebody opened the boar and didn't cover it?
Right.
He's responsible?
Right. But responsible for what? Just for nezik, but not for the other four payments.
Oh.
Right? So here's the final answer to our question. We can now sleep well at night if someone asks you. So again, here's the question. I dug a pit in a place I'm not supposed to, let's say in Rashut Rabim, and I did what the Torah says I shouldn't do. And the Torah says if someone falls in the pit, I have to pay for their nezek. It certainly says that, and I have to pay. But do I have to pay for the tsar, for the ripui, for the shevet and the boshet? The answer is no. And here we see a clear principle. Adam that caused damage directly with his kocho, with his yad, with his yad arikta, has to pay chamisha dvarim and also dmei vladot. But if I cause damage not with my body, with my hand, with my yad arikta, with my koach, not with any of that, but with my mamon, my possessions, whether it's my shor, which means regel, keren, or shein, or means my boar,
or your atomic bomb.
No, that's an extension.
That's different, right? That's like my chetz.
But how about my car?
Okay, wait, just wait a second. Are you driving? Here's the thought.
Right.
That's regal.
So wait a second. So you get the principle? So that's the looks like the answer here, mamon. If it's mamon, I only have to pay nezek. If it's me, then I have to pay for hamishad dvarim and even demei vladot. So then Amiram said, and this I think we talked about last, like long, long time ago, we brought it up. What's the category of car? Right. Is car... I remember we had this discussion already. In the classroom at Shari Tfila, we had this discussion. Is car like your mamon, or is it like you?
Are you driving it?
Yeah, assuming you're driving it.
So if you're driving the car, I think that's pretty clear. Like, you are driving into me, right? You are... Isn't that
I'm riding my horse and...
Right,
you.
It's the same thing.
That's also me, not sure.
Right.
Again, I'm guessing.
And if I'm throwing a bomb,
so if the horse without you on it wrote into me, that's category of horse.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
But if you're on the horse and you drive the horse into me,
purposely,
it looks to me like the horse is like an extension of your hand, isn't it? I mean, again, I'm.
But
I think that his case is clearer.
Here, the shore is acting on his own.
Are you sure?
And you're adding yourself into it.
You're sure the shore acts on his own and the human.
Yes. That's what it means. The shore, but not the. But Rav's case is different. Here, it's not the shore is adding something and the man is adding something to push on the bit. But here, the shore is being pushed, ridden, driven, directed directly by the hand of Amiram. I think that's pretty good.
I think shore fell down, but shore doesn't move on his own.
Shore doesn't move on his own. Of course he does.
He wants to attack the man, and you want to attack the man.
It has to be two separate entities, right?
Because if you are at all involved with the shore, then therefore wouldn't he be an extension of you?
So if I stick my dog on you,
that's different, because that would be as, you know,
like the arrow,
an extension of you, yeah.
That's what I would think. Then didn't we have once the case of a Misha sick halvo? We didn't have that? Someone who sicks his dog on someone?
No.
Yeah, we did.
I can't believe it.
When?
A
long time ago.
I also think it's a long time ago.
I remember we did.
I think we did also. I just can't remember again. Wouldn't it be great if we could remember everything we learned?
Oh my goodness, I would be so bright.
I have to tell you the truth, that this class makes me feel good. I thought only I don't remember, but you guys also don't remember.
No, we don't.
That's what's called Sarat Rabim Chatsi Nechama, right? The pain of others is half of a
comfort,
half of a comfort.
You know, when I teach piano, I notice that you have to assume the students forgot everything from lesson to lesson. And if they forget, remember something, you have to cheer.
Wow.
would somebody be an say I tell Betty to attack Shadi?
Well,
would Betty be an extension of me?
That's something else.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, or I hire him to.
Right. Well, yeah. But I still have to use my
ask
example.
Him to have right. His control. Like, I don't want to do it, you know.
Right. How do you say this in Hebrew? Ein shaliach?
Ledvar
Avera. There's no emissary, there's no messenger for a sin. In other words, you can't say, Benny, who Yoni sicked Benny on Shani, Benny can't say, I was just doing what Yoni said. Because Benny has a mind of his own. Ein shaliach ledvar Avera. You can't get off the hook by claiming I was only following orders.
But then we have another statement.
Is he saying?
Are they both?
Right. So there is a responsibility of Yoni, but there's also a responsibility of Benny.
But then we have in Gittin, Yad HaShaliach Keyad Sholcho.
That's for mitzvot, certain, like forget.
Okay.
So now, let's see if anyone remembers what we did 10 minutes ago. If we have just answered the question, that Bor is just like Shur, in that you don't pay Hamisha, you don't pay Arba Dvarim, you only pay Nezik, then what question is still on the table?
Esh.
Right, so remember, right, Esh is still on the table. Is Esh like Mamon, only has to pay Nezik, and not the other four things, or is it like Adala Mazik? And you can certainly hear that perhaps Esh is more like Adama Mazik than like Bor. Or not? So, we're going to see now in source C, we're skipping some things I prepared because I see that it's taking a while. We're going to look at the Encyclopedia Talmudit. The Encyclopedia Talmudit, it means the Talmudic Encyclopedia, is a massive work. Rav Huttner, at the very beginning, perhaps many, many years ago, that is an effort by a certain group of rabbis to put out a massive encyclopedia of all of Talmudic knowledge. And Talmudic knowledge doesn't just mean what's in the Talmud, it means Talmud and Rishonim and Achronim. Any particular question.
Wow.
Now, the problem is they've been working on it for 50 years and they only got to the letter Chaf.
Oy.
Means they've finished halfway. About almost halfway in 50 years.
Okay, well,
and their progress is slowing.
Okay,
it's not getting faster, it's slowing. Say it again?
That's very surprising.
Well, there's more questions now.
Right, as time goes on, there's more questions. Halakha is more and more developed. And since we have computers, there's more possibilities of cataloging all the information that's been said in the past 2,000 years. So they're going slower instead of faster. I remember something very funny. 25 years ago, someone asked me if I have the Encyclopedia Talmudit. And I said to them, I'm waiting till I finish. So the guy left, he said, you know what you're talking about.
That was my thought at first. He said, I'll wait a year or two.
Yeah. So I think when I said that, they were on Tet. And now they're on Chaf.
There's no hope.
Okay, so anyway, I brought here a little piece of the Encyclopedia Talmudit, Volume 2, Entry H, page 236, and the subheading is Adam, Ba'adam. By the way, the Encyclopedia Talmudit is computerized, you can get on the disk. So it says as follows, Ba'adam. Now this is about H that caused damage to a person, to a human being. Esh shizika adam begufo. Esh that caused damage to someone in their body. Kshechayuv hu mishum chetziyav. kagon l'Rabbi Yochanan, hayav madlik l'shalem l'nizak arba advarim, shem nezek tzar ripui v'shevet. Kilu hiziku biyadayim. Hiziku biyadayim. Translation.
Whoa. So it's direct.
It says if he hit him with his hands.
Right. When Aish causes damage to someone in their body, when the obligation is because of arrows, like the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, then the lighter of the fire has to pay to the person who got hurt four things, which are Nezek Tsari Pui Shevet, as if he hurt him with his hands, as if it's Chetziav. So what's happening here is...
You mean Chitzav.
Chitzav. I can't pronounce it. I'm
because
sorry. Chitzav
is like half.
Right. Say it again.
Chitzav.
Chitzav. Chitzav. Chitzav. Right.
Because Chitzav implied that it's half.
So there's a machloket in the Gemara. How do we classify Eish in general? Rabbi Yochanan says it's Chitzav. Eish is like shooting arrows. It's Eish is more similar to a Dama Mazik than any other category. All the other categories are mamon, whereas Eish is kocho shel adam. But, and according to that opinion, so then the fire has to pay these four things. It doesn't have to pay boshet, as we're about to see. Boshet, remember, requires kavana.
Yeah.
As it says, but boshet yesh rishonim potrim, kedin boshet shelo b'chavana, v'yesh mechavim, she'eish harei hi ke'ilu yadav nitkaven. So some say that you don't have to pay boshet for the Eish because there's no kavanah. They say that Eish is like kavanah. I'm not exactly sure why. Anyone who lights Eish, he knows for certain that Eish can spread. So it's if he has kavanah to do whatever the Eish does. Again, I don't know anything deep about that. But let's just go on. Kshechiyuv humishum mamono, kagon l'Reish Lakish. This is a machloket in the first generation of Amoraim in the Talmud Yerushalmi. Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish says that it's mamon, that Eish is mamon. Now, if Eish is mamon, like sure, not like Adam Mazik, then patur mi arba dvarim. I'm reading the last few words here. Patur mi arba dvarim, kamoshif patur mikol mamon shizik adam. Just like any time that mamon causes damage to a person, the owner of the mamon only has to pay nezik, but doesn't have to pay the other four categories. Just let me add, the halakha is that eish mishum mamon. We hold halakha like Reish Lakish and not like Rabbi Yochanan, which means that in the end, push comes to shove. We asked this question an hour ago, finally getting an answer. The answer is going to be halakha l'maaseh, that Adam and only Adam has to pay five things and demei vladot, whereas everything else is mamon. Sure, eish, boar, only has to pay nezek, and doesn't have to pay tsari, pui, boshet, and shevet, and certainly not the mevladot. That's the conclusion in the end.
Well, I have a difficulty when we have a bunch of categories and we want to equate one with another. Because then the question will come, why have a special category if it doesn't mean anything different?
The answer is it does mean something different in this particular point.
Eish
is like mamon.
Just to
basically, there are many different special laws for Eish, just like there's special laws for Karen and special laws for Regan and Shane.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So we'll take 5 seconds to breathe and then go on to the next Mishnah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if the people that wrote this Mishnah with the shawl and the Adam were not aware of the other categories. That it came from, after all, we have a collection of Mishnayot that came from different sources, right? That maybe the source that
dealt with. Yeah, I have no idea. Right, that's a very good question. Why is our Mishnah so unclear? Mm-hmm. Why does it let Eish and Bor go between the cracks? It only mentions Shor and Adam. That is a very good question. Mm-hmm.
It looks like they were not dealing with that, these many categories as the other Mishnah.
I don't know.
But the Torah mentions those categories.
That's true.
But you can't say they weren't aware.
That's true.
The Torah mentions Eish, the Torah mentions Bor.
I kind of see this Mishnah as a by the way remark, you know, like you know, just trying to hone in on like a moral, almost like a shore is different than a human. And
okay,
we can, well, I didn't have to explain the other things. It was just the point was the human versus an animal.
Well, perhaps we could take what you say in it's a little bit differently, that the Mishnah is telling us, look how it's written in the Mishnah, Ze Chomer Ba'adam. That's the point.
This is
what's special about Adam. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then it says, as opposed to sure, but it's really as opposed to everything. It didn't have to say everything, because the point is, this is what's special about Adam.
Right.
Yeah, so sure is kind of hover for everything.
Yeah, but still, you're right, it does become a little bit unclear.
Yes.
And we're bothered that the language is so unclear. Okay, let's go on to Mishnah 3. Mishnah 3.
Okay, look at
I said we're going to take a 5-second break. It was already 50 seconds.
I heard 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
I was dreaming, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Can I bring you anything?
Thank you very much. Yeah, can you bring me another glass of wine?
Sure. Do you want some?
No, that's really good, really
you
fine.
You said that we would kind of go back to Alana's point that this particular Mishnah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sets men above animals, more responsible.
Right. So very good, very good. So Ilana, Mary Beth just reminded me that I said we're going to come back to something that you said. So my point is this. In the end, where it's saying about this Mishnah, it's comparing Adam to Mammon. Adam to Mammon.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I don't think you can deduce from it anything about man being on a higher level than anything else. It's simply a matter of man as opposed to Mammon. Me as opposed to my possessions. Mary Beth, thank you for remembering that.
Thank you.
Okay, Gimel. So Mishnah
issue
Gimel.
Is direct or indirect?
You can say it like that.
Say again?
Direct or indirect damage.
Uh-huh.
Because the shore is owned by somebody too.
Hamakeh et avi vetimo.
Oy vay.
Someone who hits his father or his mother. Velo asa behem chabua. But he didn't make in them a wound. You hit them, but there's no visible wound.
Oh my God.
There's no scab, there's no black and blue. There's no loss of blood. That's one case. V'chovel b'chaviro b'yom ha-kippurim. Or someone who hits his fellow on Yom Kippur.
Wow.
Yeah. We had terrible people in the past.
Chayav b'chulan. You have to pay
everything.
Kulan. What does kulan mean?
All five categories.
All five, right.
Wait, if
in case of Yom Kippur,
if someone strikes their father, aren't
you
they
should
like
pay 10 times more.
If someone strikes their parent, are they not put to death? Is that
very good point. But that's why it says, Velo asa ben chabura.
But oh, so you have to
choke. And if you want to be put to death for hitting your parents, you have to make a chabura. If you don't
really?
Make a chabura,
do it right.
You won't be put to death.
And why on Yom Kippur is the significance?
Very good question.
Well, it's a holy day. I mean, it's...
No, it's something more complicated.
Why not, you know...
So...
Well, it's a Shabbat Shabbat.
All I'll say is that you ask that question. That leave the question on the table, and we'll think about it.
Talking about the day of Tshuva and repentance and stuff, and you go hit somebody, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. No?
But why especially?
But it implies that if you did that on another day, the dough would be different.
On Purim, you can.
So, well, you know what?
Didn't one rabbi cut off somebody's head?
We're drinking on Yom Kippur.
No, on Purim.
It was a drinking problem.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's sharpen Benny's question and ask it in this fashion.
But then that
when it says someone who does bodily damage to his fellow Yom Kippurim has to pay all five categories of payment, it's hinting that on a different day you wouldn't have to pay those five categories. What is the different day that it's hinting to? Don't have to answer.
But could it be saying that you're doing it on Yom Kippur and you're going to apologize immediately, and so there's no real so nothing, you know, there's no harm, no foul.
So in other words, even on Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
Telling you that their answer is no.
Okay.
It's not what you're saying. We'll see what it is, but it means that there's a specific day on which the law is different. If you're Hovel B'Chavir on a different day, then the law is different. Let's go on. Achovel ve'eved ivri. Right? You do bodily damage to an eved ivri, to a Jewish indentured servant. Hayab bekulan. You have to pay all five damages. Chutz min hashevet. Bizman shu shelo.
Sure.
You don't have to pay for his loss of work time.
He's not paid.
Because he's my employee.
Yeah.
Right. If you do this to an eved that you own.
He's not gaining anything from the work.
Right. You'd be paying yourself.
Wait, no. If you're paying for the loss of... No, because the loss of work... Well, the work time he's helping him become free. So you'd just be, you know, putting more money...
It goes by time. He's going to get free at the end of the time. All the work he does belongs to me. So if I cause him not to do work, then I lost. I have to pay myself, which means I just don't have to pay.
How do you know this is yours?
Bizman shu shelo. At the time that it was his. Okay. That he was his.
Wait,
He who does bodily damage to a non-Jewish slave of Achirim, owned not by the person himself but by someone else, chayav bechulan, has to pay all five damages, all five payments. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ein lavadim boshet. And he's apparently referring to this last case of Eved Kanani, saying, no, you don't have to pay all five, you only have to pay four, not for boshet. Let's look at the questions I asked and go much deeper into this Mishnah.
Art scroll is not politically correct. It's a Hebrew servant, but a Canaanite slave. But it's the same Hebrew word.
That's okay, because it really is very different.
Well, but I guess it's not as... Maybe it's not... It's like a compound word, maybe, is how you...
Well, it's, you know, like, the same, yeah. Evet.
But Evet Nani is like, you know...
Right, yeah, I know.
But Evet Ivoy is different.
The word Evet has a broad...
As I said, it's not politically correct. But it's correct, but it's not politically correct.
Okay. Questions at the bottom. Oh, so we're doing Dalid on my sheet D, I should say. Sources from Mishnah 3. First, we should look at Sefer Shmot 21:15. And then this Mishnah and Masechet Tanit. So let's just very, very quickly look at the verse so we can go on. So I'm opening up Parshat Mishpatim in Sefer Shmot, chapter 21, and the verse is 15, Tetvav, which reads as follows. Makeh avivi mo mot yumat. That's all it says. Someone who strikes his mother and father, mot yumat, will certainly die.
Yeah. It doesn't say... With injury or not.
Right, it doesn't say anything about the Chavura. But now we're looking at the Mishnah in Masechet Sanhedrin. In the last chapter of Masechet Sanhedrin, I've worded it here at the bottom of the page. It says as follows, Elu hen hanichnakin. These are those that are strangled. There are four different mitot beitin, ways that the beitin puts people to death. One of them is strangulation. And someone who strikes his parents is strangled to death. Under what circumstances? Says the Mishnah, Hamakeh avi v'imo eino chayav ad sheyaseh behen chabura. He's not obligated in the death penalty unless he makes a chabura. It has to be a certain level of seriousness to this striking and not just something superficial.
What if he bumps into them, or he sleepwalks and falls over them?
It's talking, I think, about someone who does it bechavana, intentionally.
Okay.
Severity, not... So, like, poisoning would be very severe, but wouldn't leave a mark.
Internal mark.
Wow. It could, though.
It's still makay. It's still...
It could leave a mark. Not necessarily a...
Not bruise,
but... It could be like, it could be something
mark
to their
liver.
Something, and if they couldn't walk right or, you know, move their arm or something like that.
I don't know. I just don't know the answer to your question.
So all these things have the prior need to hit first? Like if you shame your parents without hitting them?
It says, I'm okay.
You have to.
and it causes a
that would be an issue of kibud av em, I think.
Hey, you're certainly not allowed to shame your parents, but you won't necessarily be punished for putting them in this category. Let's look at the questions I asked about the Mishnah. Question number one we did already. When the Mishnah used the word kulan, what's referring to, it said it's hamishad dvarim. That's simple. In the case of Makeh Aviv, in the case of Chovel B'Yom HaKippurim, what is the principle that's lurking in the background here? Does anyone know? Can anyone think? We've learned this a time or times in the past.
I think it's the moral severity of it.
No, I thought because people, when they're fasting, they're weaker.
No.
Oh, that's an interesting point, though. I like that.
It's between Adam and Chovel. I don't know why. I still don't understand why.
Okay, so let me give you some hints. So let's look at the Mishnah again. The Mishnah says as follows. Hamakeh et aviv imo v'lo asa bem chabura. I'm skipping. Hayah b'kulan. You have to pay the five payments if you didn't make a chabura. The implication is if you made a chabura, you don't have to pay anything.
Oh, because the thing with the arrow in the shirt.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
If you say in Aramaic, you'll get 5 points.
No, what?
The arrow in the shirt.
Yes.
Want to tell the story of the arrow in the shirt?
So if you shoot someone with an arrow and you kill them, but you also make a hole in their shirt, you don't have to pay for the shirt because you know you're going to kill
someone with the highest category.
Right.
For which you.
Right.
Yeah. It's not clear.
In Aramaic, kimlei.
Kimlei derabavine.
Right. Very good.
Very nice.
Four points. Okay.
Yes.
Kimle bidderabamine, which means kimle, establish it. Bidderaba, in that which is greater mine. So if I, in one act, am culpable of two punishments, I only have inflicted upon me the greater punishment. So in the case of the arrow and the shirt, I have to pay for the shirt, and I have to find myself executed. Halakha says, you get off the hook for the shirt, you only have to get executed.
Oh, phew.
There's a lot of pressure.
Let's make it more severe.
So, the same thing happens here. If I am chovel be amaket vivimo, vasa chabura, and I made a chabura, such that I am going to be executed.
Okay.
The law is, I don't have to pay for the shame and all of the payments that I caused to my father. I'm going to be executed.
I'm off
the hook for the other things. But
yeah, the five payments.
For the five payments. But if I didn't make a chabua, which means that the Beit Din is not going to execute me, then I do have to pay my father for the shevet, the ripui, the tsar, the boshet, etc. Kimle doesn't apply if I didn't make a chabura because there is no execution. The same thing happens in the case of Yom HaKippurim. Okay? On Yom HaKippurim, there's no log of Kimle, the Rabbi Nail explain. If I chovel b'chaviro on Yom HaKippurim, well, I did two things bad. One is I caused damage to my friend. But the other is I violated Yom Kippur by doing a melacha.
What is the melacha?
The melacha of drawing blood.
Oh.
So on Shabbat too, so why Yom Kippur?
Ah, very good question.
Good for you.
So now, let's look at this. The penalty for doing melacha in Yom Kippurim is karet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Since karet is not...
Shabbat is killing, right?
Is skila.
Skila, okay.
Which is the answer to our question.
Wait, on Shabbat... So, just kind of a quick offside. Wounding your parent on Shabbat, is there any way to judge between the two killings, one being...
Strangulation versus stoning.
Strangulation versus stoning is
there. Oh, you do the worst one.
Worse than the other...
Yeah, you would do the strangling.
Is the strangling?
Stoning is pretty painful too, I think.
But the stoning's the lowest. Right.
Chovel b'chaviro b'yom Shabbat.
Cherev is the worst.
Doesn't have to pay.
Strangling would be worse because it's a slower death.
Right, that's what that's called.
Okay.
Well, they have the, they're okay. But
it's okay, so the Mishnah is not talking about that because it's not talking about Makeh, his parents on Shabbat.
No, he's bringing it up anyway.
Yeah. So we do have such a thing. Which death penalties are worse? We absolutely do have.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the worst one.
Yeah, just do
which would be Henning.
I don't remember. Which is worse.
Skila's like the least.
Okay. I don't remember. I trust you. So anyway, the case of Chovel v'Chaviro b'Yomuk Purim, Chayav v'Kulan, you have to pay all five payments because you're not being put to death. The point is that Karet is not
Bidei Shamayim.
Bidei Adam, and therefore it doesn't figure into Kimlei b'Derabba Minei. It's a separate cheshbon. It's a separate accounting by God. As far as we're concerned, you're not being punished for it by Beit Din. Therefore, you do have to pay the Hamisha Dvarim. But were you to Chovel b'Chaviro on Shabbat, then you'd be punished for violating Shabbat, which is Skila, and then you don't have to pay the Hamisha Dvarim.
Oh, phew.
So, even if you're not... if it's not to Beit Din or what...
Very good point.
So if you don't end up... Oh, okay, so what if you end up... No, actually, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and
if there weren't two Edim for that, then there was.
There's a principle that says, Tana Debe Cheskia, it's a brite of Cheskia that says, even if you get out of the punishment, the greater punishment, you still don't have to suffer the lesser punishment, because in theory, you are culpable for the greater punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And also you went...
I guess you could have witnesses for one thing, but not another thing. Because you could have witnesses that say... Hey, you're doing about it. Hey, you're injuring him, and you'd probably also have to witness it and say, hey, it's Shabbat, because it's two separate acts.
For Shabbat, you require not just witnesses, you require hatra'ah.
Yeah, okay.
But why would someone say, no, you can't do this Shabbat? Because you're still hurting him.
Well, you need to have, like, the whole witness is very complicated. You need to have the witnesses tell you that hey, it's Shabbat, you can't do that, and you have to go and say, hey, I don't care, I'm still doing it anyways, and then, you know.
And you don't need that whole thing for Chovel b'Chaviro. You don't need the hatra'ah.
Is there an act that punishment would be like a lash?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, if I cause damage... And I also do something that would cause me to get a lash. Is the lash more severe than the payment?
So,
and if that's the case,
I don't remember though.
I'm a multi-millionaire, and I cause damage, and I say, you know, I'll take a lash, and now I get off of paying $1 million in damages because I took a lash. It's not really fair. In the American law, we have, you know, sort of two systems. The civil law, people against people, and you pay for your damages. And then the criminal law against the state. You know, you bodily injure somebody, you take somebody's life, you hit somebody.
Yeah.
Then you have certain jail time or whatever. You have certain payments that you have to make to the state because you violated the state thing. But you always have to pay for the person-to-person damage as well.
So...
I'm sorry for getting us off track.
No, it's good.
No, it's my job.
You don't decide which punishment you get. The law decides which is more severe, which is less. But in any case, you are right, I think, that the law of Kimlei b'Derabba Minei doesn't sound fair. It's totally illogical. It's what we call Gzeirat HaKetuv.
You don't think it's for sure, because you killed the person, but...
But if the shirt belonged to me,
right?
You're wearing my shirt.
And it was an expensive shirt.
You should get part of the inheritance of that person, as to cover the shirt.
But
in American law, it's also they have certain principles too. You know, if you're convicted of murder, you also don't have to pay the time in jail for attempted murder, because of course you obviously had attempted murder as well. So the idea of only being punished for the more severe crime is certainly there.
But that's only within the penal system. Here we're talking about civil law.
Right, it's not when it's...
Yeah.
What gets you lashes?
Eating not kosher food?
I just throw that out for whatever it's worth.
But the thing is, I'm just curious.
As far as I remember...
If you're doing two separate things, like if you're eating the food... While you're hitting someone, is it the?
No, it's not. It's not simultaneity. It has to be the same act.
So yeah, so I'm still unsure.
What if you're
one act?
What if you're eating? If you just take a bite out of your father,
okay,
that's not what it should be inflicting on us.
Humans are part.
What if you're like hitting it with a sausage?
Right, I mean, I don't know what the
Yeah.
What's wrong with hitting him with the sausage?
It's not kosher.
It doesn't matter if it's not kosher.
But it's so funny.
Okay.
Good job, Yon.
So anyway, we have discussed Kimli with the Rabbi in the past, and indeed, as far as I remember, Kimli Rabbi is a Gzerat HaKetuv that doesn't seem to be fair.
But also, like, the king sets up his own legal system as well, isn't that? There's the halakhic legal system, but also the king's legal system, which should deal with all the other things.
Okay, so that's good. I don't know where you heard about this.
We had a different
from here. So according to Rabbeinu Nissim Laran, in his theory of Jewish law, he understands that the king has the right and the responsibility to address lack of fairness in the halakha and to deal with that outside of the judicial system, with his own system.
Okay. Who is Rabbi Nissim Laran?
Laran. We're talking about the...
Not Rabbi Nissim Laran?
1380 to 1440,
okay.
I don't know. So, let's go on. Let's see, question four, we discussed, what would the law be in the case of Asa ben Chamorah? We said the law would be King Lebed Rabbi name, he doesn't have to pay. We discussed five, that Yom Kippur is karet, therefore there's no king labor the rabbinei. Six, we did already. So seven gets us to the rest of the Mishnah. Let's do question seven. What is the rationale behind the ruling in the case of Eved Ivri that says chutz min hashevet?
Oh, we discussed
that. We did
that
already also, right?
Right.
Fine, let's go on. Eight, do the words Bismanshu Shalo modify chutz min hashevet or also chayav b'kulan? Think of that question. Okay, Lan said, right? The words Bismanshu Shalo don't modify chayav b'kulan. Yeah. They only modify chutz min hashevet. Whereas if we look at the Mishnah, we should actually put the comma in a different place than my edition puts it. We should read it like this: Achovel beved ivri chayav b'kulan. Next thought. Chutz min hashevet is man shu shalom.
No, that's what this means.
Yeah.
I have a comma after the word shevet.
No, we have a comma after kulam.
Okay, then that's good.
Yeah.
Well, it's a kal v'chomer. If you have to pay Acher and his slave, all five, how much more so would you pay if he was a Hebrew instead of a Canaanite? You see my kal v'chomer?
Okay.
Do you understand what I said?
I'm thinking.
You're doubting Rabbi Schlesinger's understanding?
No, I just
you can certainly doubt.
I'm doubting my
especially when I'm just off the plane.
Okay. It's a kal v'chomer because if you have to pay all five for the Canaanite slave who's of another person's, how much more so would you pay a Hebrew slave of another person's? So
it could be. Okay.
But also, would it make sense to say that because if it's not, if somebody strikes so this would be saying that if I strike somebody else's Hebrew indentured servant, then a whole different set of rules apply, but this only applies
if I was to read it differently.
Right. Then this is only the rule for my own personal indentured servant.
That's what you could have thought, but that's wrong. That's certainly a wrong reading.
Right.
Right. The reading is Chovel Bev Divri Chayav B'Kulan all the time. Then, concerning Shevet, there's an exception.
Right, I guess it wouldn't make sense.
It wouldn't. No, okay. It wouldn't. I just want to make sure that we understood that this is the only way to read it.
Now, something not clear. Evet Knani shel acherim chayav v'chulan. So, Evet Knani that is my own, I don't have to pay a thing?
Good point.
Seems like
let's read about that. Let's read the questions about that. But that's a very good point. Question 9 was, who received the payment in the case of Eved Ivri? Right, let's read the Mishnah again. Hovel Eved Ivri, Haya B'Kulan, and that applies whether you struck your Eved Ivri or someone else's Eved Ivri. Right. Now, who gets the money?
The Eved.
The Eved. Because the Eved is another human being with
he's
complete
he's
human
Hebrew.
Yes, yeah, with complete legal autonomy and rights. And that's why the art scroll doesn't call him an Evid. He calls doesn't call him a slave, calls him an indentured servant, which is really true.
But in the case of the Canaanite.
But in the case of a Canaanite, let's go to the next question. Who receives the payments in the case of Evid Kani?
The owner.
Here the answer is the owner. Here the answer is the owner. If I strike, let's go back to the words
that's
of the Mishnah. Right, achovel be'evid knani shel achirim hayav bekulan. And Ilana was saying the implication is if I chovel be'evid knani sheli
patur,
because I could have to pay myself.
Yeah, I see.
So it's basically saying the Gentile slave is a property, and the Hebrew is just a servant.
To a large degree, that's what it's saying. Although,
right,
we have to go a little bit further to see it's not completely true, but to a large degree, that is what we're saying.
And
which
so,
is question 11. What would be the law in the case of Chovel Bevid Kanani Shel Atzmo?
Yes,
of Atzmo. We said you don't have to pay.
But that's horrible.
Yes.
Okay, very good. So we could spend 2 minutes or 5 minutes or a whole day on that.
There's some Torah law
that's
about,
like South
about mutilating your slave and having to set him free, no?
Yes, when we're saying that if you strike your Eved Kani, you don't have to pay, that doesn't mean you're allowed to do it.
Right.
It only means that you're not culpable if you do it.
You're not right. What?
Not culpable for the damages, but you may be culpable.
You need
exactly true. The Torah does say that if you do damage to your slave, to Rashei Everim, which means main limbs, if you poke out an eye or cut off a hand, whether you did it on purpose or not, the Torah says you have to set him free.
Right.
Now that's true. But as far as damage money goes, whether you do damage to Rashei Everim or just damage, make a wound, did it on purpose or not, you're not supposed to do it.
So there's a.
But if you did it, you don't have to pay damages because you'd have to pay yourself.
Okay, so there is a retribution for it. So that's
retribution only for Rashei Everim, for major limbs, but not for a Chabura. If you make a little.
But you're not allowed to make a.
You're not allowed to do it. So but if you do it, you don't have to pay.
It's moral rather than.
But also, you know, isn't this, the law is constructed? You know, the law isn't made to kind of deal with Jews' interactions with, you know, with other people. There aren't things about, you know, lashon hara against you know against non-Jews. And wouldn't that fall under the? Wouldn't those laws fall into the kind of the category of, you know, what the king has to construct, you know, if he's
which king?
In charge of?
I don't know. Bidding has a king in his version of this.
But the matter of the king is a legal theory of Rabbeinu Nissim.
Mm-hmm.
It might or not be true. It's his
power?
What should I say? But the halakha is the halakha. I mean, I don't understand what that has to do with what we're studying here. The Mishnah doesn't necessarily know of any king who's going to deal
with the person who's hitting their non-Jewish slave, and you know there isn't any, you know, payment for that. It seems, you know, like why should the halakha govern, you know, that interaction, because it's not. I would kind of see it as in the same category with the like lashon hara against, you know, a non-Jewish person. Still, it's really not covered under Jewish law.
Well, first of all, let me tell you that non-Jewish slaves are actually partially Jewish. Right, non-Jewish slaves are obligated in all of the negative mitzvot and all of the positive mitzvot that aren't tied to time.
This was like Tommy.
Like women. You're kind
one
of
example.
Like women.
Yeah, right, yeah. So it's not true that a non-Jewish slave is a non-Jewish slave. A non-Jewish slave is 90% Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
If I buy a slave, he has a year to decide to take upon himself the mitzvot. And if he decides against it, I have to sell him to a non-Jew.
Mm-hmm.
But if I want to keep him, he has to take upon himself the mitzvot.
Then he becomes.
He actually has to undergo tevilah, undergo immersion, like conversion. Yeah, it's a privilege to be a Jewish slave.
But that's a permanent status.
It's a permanent status, and when I free him, he becomes completely Jewish.
If you free him.
If I free him.
Mm. Really?
Yes.
Don't you have to free him after the... In the,
after the are there any slave conversion programs?
So...
So there's no goys.
Hit me.
So Tavi never was freed because he died, right? And Rabbi.
Oh, right, he died, right. Mourned for right, him. Exactly.
Rabbi Gamliel.
So, well, you can shoot
right, that was the second brachot. So, yeah. Anyway, just let me mention, if I was brought up, certainly if we judge these things on the basis of modern sensitivities, the very concept of a non Jewish slave is absolutely a moral scandal. So how do you deal with that? Again, it's not the subject of our study here. We're doing kind of technical halakha, but perhaps it is a proper thing to spend 2 minutes on it. So I would say there's two ways to approach it. You could take the approach that says, look, the Torah is the word of God, and therefore we should accept its moral judgments. I guess that means that there's such a thing as people who were created to be slaves, and it's in their best interest to be slaves, and you just have to accept that. And then, wait a second. And our moral judgments have to be understood to be subjective and influenced by non-Jewish... Wait a second, sources. I personally don't...
That's one approach.
Accept that. It's hard for me.
The created to be slaves part, not the moral part, though, but just, you know, where in the Torah do we see some...
It's not that we see it someplace, we just have to assume that that is what's going on.
I don't understand that assumption, though.
Well, what about all those laws about slaves? What about all the discussion?
Yeah, but it talks about, you know, slaves captured in battle, and this and that.
You have to say, if someone ends up being a slave, it must have been a result of divine hashgacha, but that person was created to be a slave.
Okay, I see.
Let me just remind you that the whole concept that all men are created equal and no one was created to be a slave is very, very, very new. I mean, in Aristotle, and this was accepted until at least 300 years ago, it was a given that some human beings were created to be free and most human beings were created to be slaves. And that was considered to be completely moral and modern and acceptable. It's changed, and I'm not upset that it's changed, but our conception is quite new. It's quite new.
In the South, there were Jews that were owning slaves?
Yeah.
Wait, so what is the second...
Well, I think that Chani wanted to say something.
Wouldn't it be that people who say some people were created to be slaves, wouldn't those people be the type that have slaves and the people that... this shouldn't be wrong, because they were created to be slaves.
There is a conflict of interest.
You're right, but...
Everybody has
I know that the Baptist Church, at the time of the segregation, used to preach that the blacks were the ewers they compared them to the people from Giv'on, that they were created by God to be the carriers of water and wood.
I think the American definition of slave is modeled off these South American, the Civil War, slavery and stuff. I think the nature of slavery in the Tanakh and in the Talmud was very different than what it was.
That's true. But let me... So another way to look at it would be to take the approach that says that the Torah has to be understood on the basis of a distinction between, on the one hand, ideals, and on the other hand, means... Ideals and means.
Like bigger
means. Which means as follows, that it could very well be that I could believe that the Torah has an ideal based, for example, on the first chapter of Bereshit, that all human beings are created by God and therefore they should be free. On the other hand, the Torah was given at a certain time in human history when slavery was acceptable and the economies were based upon slavery. And any Torah that would abolish slavery wouldn't have been viable and wouldn't have been accepted. would just be seen as something wacky, far out, impossible to implement, that wouldn't have been accepted. And therefore, we can understand that the laws of slavery are means of the Torah to take certain ideals and to implement them on a gradual basis. In other words, the Torah's ideal might be that slavery is forbidden, but the Torah couldn't implement that ideal. Therefore, the Torah says you're allowed to have slaves, but you have to follow certain laws. And these laws bring slavery to a higher moral level, and at the same time, these laws are hinting to us that the Torah really wants to eventually abolish slavery. That's Rav Kook takes that approach.
It's also the Rambam, right, about
quote, and it's based upon the Rambam's understanding of the very nature of Torah. But what we're talking about here is really two different conceptions of what Torah is. What you'll usually hear people saying in the Orthodox world is that Torah is the absolute ideal word of God, and what it says is what goes, finished. That's the simple way of understanding it. The Rambam tells us that that doesn't seem to be the case if you look deeply. There's a lot of things in the Torah that don't seem to be divine ideals. So why in the Torah? And the answer has to be because they're compromises with society as it was, compromises with human nature, but they include, these compromises include hints that eventually the Torah wants Torah Baal Peh to pick up where Torah Bichtav left off and continue the process of elevating things until they are, in this case, abolished. For example, perfect example.
Perfect example.
Exactly. Bob's going to say
vegetarianism.
Vegetarianism. Right. The Torah allows us to eat meat. Many would say, Rav Kook, for example, Torah wants us not to eat meat.
Of course not.
But allows us to eat meat.
Right.
But it does so in a fashion that makes meat eating difficult. You have to slaughter it kosher, you have to take out the blood, you have to wait 6 hours after meat. It's very hard. The Torah hints to you that we prefer that you don't eat meat. And it might be the same thing with slavery.
Although on the Torah Pesach, everybody would have to eat, true. Right? So you could not be perfectly...
Bob, what do you do for Korban Pesach? When the Beit Mikdash is going to be...
Oh, when Mashiach comes, you don't have to... All the things you don't have to do. All the mitzvot and all that stuff, right?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So you don't have to do the Korban Pesach, right?
Why not?
Well, you're supposed to still remember to eat your
family. I thought you don't have to do the Korban Pesach now because the temple's not there. And then when the Mashiach comes, I thought you said... That the festivals and things are done away with except for Purim or something. I may have this very wrong, but I thought...
I think I'm going to Shabbat.
Right, there's different midrashim, and you're right, the Rambam does bring down
Purim and Sukkot. Purim and Sukkot.
Kola.
Sukkot as, you know...
Huh?
Okay,
I don't know. Learn this, cow sacrifice. From you.
No pressure.
I think.
I'll tell you what we do in my family. We have a little plastic bowl.
I remember asking the specific question.
That we use as the...
Very interesting.
Yeah, from some toy of my granddaughter.
Okay.
We put it on the plate.
So, let's just... I guess we only have a few more minutes left. You guys are leaving very quickly.
We haven't come to the baseball thing.
Yeah, the baseball.
We certainly haven't, right. Question 11. What would be the case of Chovel Be'evid Kanani Shalatzmo? We said you don't have to pay. Right. Where in this tract that we encountered the Mishnah is related to the previous question. Okay, we won't go into it because time is late. Upon which ruling the previous Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda basing his opinion? Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein la'avadim boshet.
In the previous Mishnah,
and I really should have said in Mishnah Aleph, right?
But
In Mishnah Aleph, I should have said.
Yes.
Right, Mishnah Aleph. Indeed, you're right. Question 14, in what sense does it appear that there are two levels of meaning in the way that Rabbi Yehuda used the word boshet? So when Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein lavadin boshet, he's really saying two things, so it appears to me, one flowing from the other. Ein lavadin boshet. An Evid doesn't experience boshet. At least that's what Rabbi Yehuda thinks. Because he's just used to being mivuyash kol hazman. He doesn't take It's seriously, because that's who he is. That's what happens to him.
Position.
People spit on him and because of his position. A kol lefi ha mitbayesh. In this case, his place in life is to be downtrodden. So if you step on him and embarrass him, he's not embarrassed. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda says.
His very position is embarrassing continually. If you were going to compensate him for that, everybody would have to compensate him all the time.
That'd be a very good point. That's a very good point.
Why would you think that versus he just doesn't get paid that category of damage?
Well, what I'm saying is that because Ein Levadim Boshit, in the sense that he doesn't experience Boshit, therefore he doesn't have to pay. You don't have to pay for Boshit because
okay,
he doesn't experience Boshit.
You could.
That's what I'm suggesting. Another way to say it is that Rabbi Yehuda is not making that deeper statement about the essence of the Eved. He's just saying that the Eved doesn't get Boshit money. But then why?
Well, because what Rabbi Yehuda might say is that his position, his position in life at the moment is so embarrassing that nothing can make it worse. So having to pay him for these things that have been done to him are little compared to this more overarching.
But isn't the same thing that I said? It's not really saying that he doesn't experience these things at Boshit.
Not that he's used to it, but he's so embarrassed by where he is that nothing else matters. Not that he's necessarily not that people do it to him all the time, or that he's used to it, But it's kind of it's pennies, compared to his
Boshit
experience already.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you think that it's the other way, that because he's downtrodden, you should be more considerate.
I disagree with every human personally,
I don't know that you necessarily have to interpret it that way. I mean, it seems like that's. Would you?
Do we all agree with Rabbi Yehuda? Is that what you're saying?
No, why not say this is just a? Not that you don't have to explain why. If you say this is just that he's not does not receive damages in this category, okay, you still have to explain it. But he isn't necessarily making a judgment on.
Okay, fine. Well, could be that I'm going too far.
And would it be worded this way, or would it be? Would you say or something that. If you're saying that a slave does not suffer embarrassment versus is not paid damages in the category of embarrassment, would it be worded differently?
I don't know. What I'm thinking is that Ein Levadim Boshit, it's worded in the sense of there's no Boshit payments, but it implies, I'm claiming, I could be wrong, I'm claiming that in a deeper sense, ain't no Boshit. If I only wanted to say that he doesn't have Boshit in the essence of his life, would I have said it differently? I don't know. Yeah. But here, perhaps we'll end with this if you have to go, we come to a structural issue that we've seen many times in the past. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ain levadin Boshit. Do we interpret that?
Is Eved Kanani or both of them?
Okay, wait a second. Do we interpret that as a statement against the Tanakhama? Do we interpret it as a machloket or simply as a clarification
that
the Tanakhama would agree with? We have such structural issues in the past.
Yes.
And here, it's hard to know. Does the Tanakhama agree or disagree? The answer is we don't know.
Didn't anybody ever write anything about it?
No, of course in the Rishonim, this is a discussion. But from the structure of the Mishnah, it's just not clear.
Septum.
Well, if the Tanakhama did agree, why would they just quote it to Rabbi Yehuda?
If the Tanakhama agreed, simply Rabbi Yehuda was the one that said it. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda looked at the Mishnah and said, everyone knows
then
that.
Then why make statements for Chazal or the Tanakhama in the first place? So if everyone agrees with the statement. And you're saying that you're saying that everyone could be agreeing with Rabbi Yehuda's statements, and the reason why they said Rabbi Yehuda
is because Ravihuda brought it up. And why make any statement that, you know, why not attribute everything to some person? Because someone had to say it first. Someone had to bring it up.
The answer is simply that the Mishnah is a collection of statements made at different times and different places. And sometimes it brings from a Beit Midrash in which some individual said it. Sometimes it brings from a different Beit Midrash in which it wasn't attributed. In other words, there's no consistency. There's no consistency.
Yehuda here is Yehuda Nasi?
No, it's Rabbi Yehuda Ben Eli. Always in the Mishnah, it's like that. So I guess that we'll end here, and then next time we'll do the next Mishnayot that have to do with this story about the
baseball.
So next month is another 2 weeks, by the way.
Cool.
Next month is February. Anyone have the date in front of them? February 9th? That sounds like it makes sense. 9th through the